Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast on this fine bank holiday Monday, if you're in the UK, that is. I don't know what kind of Monday it is around the rest of the world, but it is certainly a Monday, unless you're in Australia, in which case it might be Tuesday. Anyway, getting bogged down a bit. Where we come to you 8 p.m. On a Monday evening in Putney, Richmond and Solihull, respectively, the day after the completion of the Sunshine Double. We've been doing the sort of boggy, sodden double here in the UK. David, how you doing?
Yeah, I haven't been out all day, so I just thought I'll keep the curtains closed. It looks horrible. So, yeah, we've done the Sunshine Double effectively. We've come through it, and it was actually quite good in the end, wasn't it? So we get to talk about it now.
It was quite good in the end. Yeah, I think this will go down as a good Sunshine Double. Matt is here, and for everybody joining us live on YouTube, hello, first and foremost, and welcome to the recurring game of will this be the show where Matt has put something on his plain cream wall? The answer, of course, is no, not today. Hello, Matt.
Hello, yes. Every time we do one of these, it's just... there's such a hit to my confidence because my unremarkable background gets commented upon. But look, it's a marathon, not a sprint, and one day there is going to be a fun update to the wall behind me. I just need the landlord's permission to be able to do some stuff.
Oh, he's bringing the landlord into it now. It was a different excuse before. Well, I'm pleased you've put that on the record because my mum does keep asking me, has Matt put anything on that wall yet? So, Mum, he's answered the question. It's coming, all in good time. We have Miami things to talk about. Before we do that, I'm going to tell you about On Location, the premium hospitality, and experience provider. We'd like to give a big, big shout out to On Location, who've been our sponsors throughout the Sunshine Double. On Location, as you probably know and should know, can arrange the best tennis experiences imaginable to all of the biggest tournaments in the world, including the US Open. Their US Open travel packages include stays at hotels such as the five-star Mandarin Oriental, where Stefan Edberg insists on staying. Or always used to. That information is up to date as of about 2013. Choice of seats in the Promenade Loge or Stadium Suite in Arthur Ashe Stadium or courtside on Louis Armstrong. Daily round trip transportation from your hotel. A 2024 US Open gift pack. We don't know what's in the gift pack, folks, but I feel quite sure it'll be great. Who doesn't love a goodie bag? An expert on-site tour host, TBC on whether that tour host is David Law. David is the tour host at Wimbledon for Five Live. David does a good a good Grand Slam tour, and he's very tall. So if you get lost on the tour, you can arrange to meet back at David. And optional access to the Overlook hospitality area with its all-inclusive dining and drinks in multiple bars. So On Location has some brilliant ticket packages as well if you don't need accommodation. All of that is available to browse at your leisure at toursfortennis.com, toursfortennis.com, to check out everything that they have. And if you're a friend of the Tennis Podcast, you can contact us at friends@tennispodcast.net for a 5% discount code. Now, on to Miami things via Charleston things, because tennis never stops and tennis has resumed. It's on our respective tellies right now. Amanda Anisimova is currently a setup on Elise Cornet, and I mention that because, of course, firstly, it'll explain why Matt might be just a touch distracted throughout this show, because, I mean, Amanda Anisimova just demands his attention whenever she's playing tennis. But also, it brings our attention to the backhand list. Because perhaps we should lead into Miami chat with the big backhand list news. Matt, take it away.
Well, I guess Amanda Anisimova has heard that things are happening on the backhand list, so she's back in action to remind everyone that really it's a list of one. But if we are expanding it to a list of five, then Danielle Collins is officially on the backhand list. I raised the stakes in the middle of the Miami final when it was just obvious that the Danielle Collins backhand on that day was frankly better than the Elena Rybakina backhand, which is already on the backhand list. And I just thought, I need to put Collins's backhand on this list, but I feel like she needs to earn it. And so I said, if she wins the title, she will be on the backhand list. And she went and did it. And I feel really, really good about it. It's been a long time coming. Some people are saying that I've sold out and got rid of the niche backhands on the list and started getting in the more successful backhands. And look, maybe that is an accusation that you can level at me, but I think the list is as strong as it's ever been, and Danielle Collins deserves her place on it.
It's definitely stronger than when Anna Bogdan was on it, I think. There was a time when it was Anna Bogdan, Victoria Golubic. Matt was trying to be sort of indie with his backhand list. He's gone somewhat
I've
more
gone
mainstream. He's gone very mainstream, and he's got a Miami WTA 1000 champion on there. But no arguments from me. Danielle Collins can go on whatever goddamn list she likes, as far as I'm concerned. The biggest title of her career, playing pretty much her home tournament. She's a Florida resident, a Florida native. For the last time in her career, of course, she is absolutely set on retiring this year. The lady is not for turning. And she beat Elena Rybakina 7-5, 6-3 in the final, the first tournament where she's had her dog with her. She thinks that was a factor in propelling her to success. Honestly, it's the absolute dream story. If it's not patently clear from everything I've said up to this point on the Tennis Podcast, I love Danielle Collins and I'm thrilled for her.
Do you remember that time when there was like this correlation between Bianca Andreescu winning tournaments and
Coco Andreescu?
Do I remember
that time, Matt?
Of course you do. But like, you had like a deep dive on the fact that every time Coco Andreescu was present, it seemed that Andreescu had won the tournament.
Yeah, people perform better when they're... It's a comfort blanket. You two have both experienced the comfort blanket that a cuddly dog can provide. Yeah, that's the sort of stat that I do. Look, how good, David, was Danielle Collins in Miami over the course of the last 2 weeks?
As good as it gets, I think. I don't think she can play any better than she did last 10 days. She was wiping the floor with very good opponents all the way through. And then she came up against an absolutely top draw opponent who wasn't playing badly. And she still had too much for her. And I don't know where her force of personality and will intersect with her skill set, but they were all just perfectly in tune with one another in the course of this match. I mean, it was just an amazing match. I had my mum over to watch this match with us. So I've got my kids on the sofa. They were both engrossed, you know, and I'm 70 years older than them is my mum, and we're all just sat there, just absolutely engrossed in this match, you know. And sometimes you can be doing other things, can't you, when a tennis match is on or a sporting occasion. And the whole family was just totally engrossed in it. And I think they are a perfect combination of opponent. But Collins just does make you feel things, whether you like her or you don't. And there are people out there who don't like her. She's not necessarily their cup of tea, but she's my cup of tea. And I mean, I think she's on all three of our lists. Backhand list for Matt, intensity list, obviously, for Catherine, and wish list for me for this year, because I like her anyway. But the fact that it is her final year, or at least that's what she's telling us, and I don't see that that's going to change from the way she's talking. It was a brilliant story and experience, and I'm really glad we all got to enjoy it, because I often think when I watch her, she could be doing even better than she is, because when she really hits her straps, and particularly on that backhand side, and she just threatens you with that shot off return, it's not just a good shot, there's such intent behind it that I think that actually she maybe could have achieved even more in her career. Obviously, we know she's suffered horribly through ill health. And if she, who knows, she may not be done yet for this year. There may be more in the tank for her to go and hurt some more top players, because she's good enough.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people asking here in the chat that kind of the question on a lot of people's lists, which is, should we view this as a moment, a beautiful way to punctuate her final year on tour? Maybe there will be other moments, but this likely to be the crowning moment? Or should we see this as a statement of intent from Danielle Collins about what she can achieve in the remainder of her final year on tour?
Why not? Why should she not now go and win a Grand Slam? I mean, she's good enough. Why not? Give me good reasons why not. She had everybody in that draw. And she won the tournament.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think probably the main thing to say is, like, she's only got three left to play, and it's really hard to win Grand Slams, and, like, there just aren't that many chances, and I don't feel like she's seen her have that many good results on grass. I know she's reached the last eight at the French Open in the past. I guess the US Open will be the big one for her. And, yeah, like,
Olympics,
in this form,
anyone?
She can
Collins,
win the US
Olympics?
Open.
Olympics?
Olympics?
How many times can I say Olympics? she should make the US
Well, she's got to get
now,
in
right?
the team. She's got to get in the
it's
team.
It's not a given, but she's in a good position now to make the Olympic team. Would that be right? I know it's complicated, Olympic qualification. It's not a sexy subject. I don't know where I led us here. It involves a lot of numbers and clauses and caveats, but I think she's in a good position now.
I mean, I think Pegula and Goff are locks for the US team, and then I think it will be most likely two out of Keys, Navarro and Collins. And, you know, they're just all so close to each other in those rankings now.
Okay. Look, I don't think she's going to go back on her retirement plan. And I honestly don't think these results have... I think, if anything, these results solidify her decision, if it needed solidifying. One of the things I love so much about her is that she just absolutely knows who she is and makes no apology for it. I think so many tennis players... I know we talk about grown-ups in the room so much, but so many tennis players don't really know who they are at their core, certainly outside of a tennis court. And I totally understand that, and I feel for them. These are athletes that, in order to get to the elite level they've had to pretty much sacrifice any personal development outside of forehands and backhands. But Danielle Collins has somehow, and I'm sure going through the college system helps with this, but somehow managed to establish a real sense of self as well as being an incredible tennis player. And I think she's a well-rounded enough human being that she will miss tennis desperately, and I'm sure miss competing desperately. She'll have to find some kind of outlet for that competitive spirit, because that just cannot lie dormant in a human being. But I think she knows she can establish a life without it, and that's a very heartening thought. I was trying throughout and in the aftermath of Danielle Collins' incredibly poised trophy speech on Saturday to really sum up exactly what it is about Danielle Collins that not only makes me sort of punch the air with delight at her feistiness, but also feel really quite emotional actually about what she's doing. And just as I was trying to compose those words, we received a message from a listener, longtime listener, friend of the pod, great supporter of the show, Vicky Spreadbury, who is with us live now and in the chat. Hello, Vicky. And Vicky summed up what I was trying to say better than I ever could have. So we checked with Vicky, and she's happy for us to read out her message on the show. So I'm going to do exactly that. Vicky said, on the barge, by the way, the barge being it's the in place to express informed, articulate opinions about the sport. Vicky said, I'm really pleased for Danielle in a different way to my usual feelings about tennis wins, because she isn't someone who I normally cheer for. I didn't have the words to express this last night, but I'll give it a go. This week at work, my colleague came in literally limping with pain from the endometriosis on her kidneys. I've just hit the 6-week recovery point today after a hysterectomy to relieve the symptoms of a submucosal fibroid, which was causing so many logistical and physical difficulties that I was very anemic despite constantly taking large quantities of iron tablets. As a child and teenager, I used to faint and vomit from period pain every single month. I've spent the last 2 years, and it's only now I'm starting to recover that I can see how insidious the effects are. Exhausted and unable to live my life fully due to the constant drain on my physical and mental resources. That Danielle Collins has fought this long and this hard through the gynecological challenges she's faced is more impressive than I have words to express. And I'm not surprised she's reached a point where she wants to stop. I'm so pleased she's got this win to take away with her. But she's not alone. My colleague isn't alone. My condition is and was really common in women over 40. Endometriosis, adenomyosis, dysmenorrhea, fibroids, etc. Apologies, Vicky, for stuttering pronunciation there, are still things that can be very difficult to treat, and even the treatments for them can cause the kind of effects that limit people's opportunities to be athletes. How many great potential sportswomen are there out there who've been unable to compete because their reproductive system has made it impossible? And for women of colour in particular, who are already dealing with bias in the system, both tennis and medical, but who are also more prone to fibroids and certainly in the US more at risk during childbirth, women's healthcare is not good enough, frankly. So I love that the WTA is sponsored by Hologic, and I want even more focus on and regular awareness of the health challenges that women face. More open discussion of periods and the effect and their effect on performance. There's no need to highlight individual issues unless that individual wants that. But the menstrual cycle, hormones, blood loss, cramping, etc., is science, and that's a big part of sport these days. Who knows? The research might actually drive better health outcomes for all women and not just athletes. It's brilliant, Vicky, and thank you so much. And thank you for allowing us to read that out. It's a chronically and embarrassingly underfunded area of medical science and sports science, and you know, we all know the reasons for that. And if you're interested in that, by the way, there's a book by Caroline Criado Perez called Invisible Women, which is just absolutely stunning on that kind of subject. But yeah, Danielle Collins, what an absolute hero. And watching that acceptance speech that she did, where she thanked absolutely everybody that she wanted to thank, did she? She wasn't thinking, oh my goodness, I must keep this short, I must wrap up, people are probably wanting me to finish. She was thinking, no, I've earned this moment. I'm going to thank everybody that I think is worthy of being thanked. She thanked the security guard. She said, this is the safest I've ever felt at a tennis tournament. It was so wonderful, and it was so indicative of her character trait of refusing to make herself smaller to make anybody else feel comfortable, which is unusual in women, sadly unusual in women. I look at Danielle Collins and I imagine how many times she's been told that she's bossy or too much, or, you know, just tone it down a bit, you're getting in people's faces. And she's channeled all those qualities that have made people uncomfortable over the years, and she's turned them into the qualities of a champion. And I love it so much.
Yeah, me too. I thought for a moment she was going to thank you, Catherine, for your something big at a big event prediction. And I would have been very happy with that. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like maybe she was a little misunderstood earlier on in her career. But now, like, I just love how it's so clear who she is and what she stands for. And I think it's a really powerful message that even though she's playing some of the best tennis of her life, of her career, she's saying, well, my retirement's not about that. It's about other things that I want to do in life. And you know, it's been difficult for her because of all the challenges that you've expressed. It's been very difficult being a tennis player, and she's kind of had enough and is at peace with that, and yet is playing some of the best tennis of her career. And yeah, all power to Danielle Collins. That is a great week and a great, great story for the WTA Tour.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
On the ATP side, Jannik Sinner won only his second ATP Masters 1000 title. In my head, given sort of just how quickly he's accelerated himself to the status of kind of Novak Djokovic-esque undefeatable champion, in my head he's sort of got a tally of about 15 Masters 1000s and counting. But no, it was in fact only his second, 6-3, 6-1 over Grigor Dimitrov in the final, and he is the new world number two. for Dimitrov, we'll give him his moment in a minute, won't we? Because his moment was his defeat, I think, over Alexander Zverev in the semi-final. But I'm not sure, David, anybody could have lived with the level of Jannik Sinner in that final, and frankly, the semi-final, the 6-1, 6-2 dismissal of Daniil Medvedev.
I mean, put it this way, I'd love to see that level against a top-notch Novak Djokovic and a top-notch Carlos Alcaraz. That is what I dream of for the next 2 years. Because what he did the last 10 days is kind of what I was asking for during Indian Wells when I said that I felt it was a big tournament for him. What I meant was I felt like he needed to take what he'd done at the end of last year and by winning the Australian Open and then just come out and dominate people, because I feel like that is in there with him. When I think back to 1995, we had Andre Agassi winning the Australian Open, beating Pete Sampras in the final. Then Sampras beat Agassi in the Indian Wells final. And then Agassi came out and beat Sampras in Miami and then in Canada, and then they faced each other at the US Open. It was just the most incredible year of rivalry. I mentioned the other week about the 2011 Novak Djokovic, and there is that feel to me of what Jannik Sinner is doing right at the moment. I accept that it's not fair to look at him and the other, his contemporaries through the lens of the big three. I realize that isn't really fair, but he's so good. And he's elevated his level and his sense of being able to dominate to such a degree that it doesn't feel far-fetched to be talking in those terms, because he seems to be doing it in a really sustainable kind of way. He doesn't look like he's scaling the outer limits of his potential here in a way that isn't repeatable. He's just a brilliant player and a brilliant athlete, and he's got the perfect sort of mindset. I mean, it does make me wonder what happened to him in that Indian Wells match against Alcaraz. I mean, Alcaraz was part of the reason that he didn't win that match, of course, but he won the first set 6-1, which is exactly what Novak Djokovic was doing to Federer and Nadal in the height of his powers in about 2015, 2016. He was just coming out and destroying them. And I don't know, Sinner's got a look in his eye right now that he's just coming out along to take you out, no matter who you are.
There's been a fun sort of David Law bingo going on in the chat. Yeah. Will he?
Excellent.
Will he predict Sinner to win the next 12 slams? But actually what happened was he went back to the 90s.
Yeah. I don't read the chat.
Compared it to that era. It was fun.
There was speculation, David, that you were brewing up to a big Jannik Sinner prediction, like he's going to win the next 20 Masters 1000s or something.
I would
That's
be a bit compromised,
come here for, David.
Wouldn't I? given that Alcaraz is supposed to be winning the next 12 and he's just lost the last two. I believe those two and the last whatever is left of Novak Djokovic is just such a delicious prospect. What really interests me is what Jannik Sinner has done to Daniil Medvedev. I mean, Medvedev used to just destroy him time after time. Sinner looked lost. And I think it is important to remember that he also looked lost for two sets in Melbourne. So maybe this is the outlier. Maybe this is a bit of a one-off. But I'm so fascinated to see where Sinner can take this, because there's no reason why he shouldn't be top drawer on clay. I do question his ability to do it on grass. But I'd have probably said that a year ago about Alcaraz. So, look, I don't think he has the dexterity of Alcaraz, the flair of Alcaraz, but he has something else. He has a bit of Djokovic in him, and he's done pretty well, hasn't he?
Yeah, like there's so many Djokovic traits to Sinner's tennis. Like the fact that he can hit such incredible offensive shots from defensive positions is kind of something that it seems like if Djokovic didn't invent it, he certainly sort of perfected it. And Sinner is really doing that. There were a couple of sliding backhand passing shots in the final against Dimitrov. And just sort of generally, he can he can restrict and suffocate opponents with his depth in the way that Djokovic does, and yet he's got so much pop on the ball as well. Like, he's ripping the ball, and all that combined in the finals, we just totally overwhelm Dimitrov. I mean, there was a stat at the end, wasn't there, that Sinner hadn't hit a single unforced error on his backhand. And it wasn't like he was just rolling it in. You know, he was going after that shot, and still he wasn't missing. And just as David described, like, I've never seen Medvedev look so lost on a tennis court as he did against Sinner in that semi-final. You know, Medvedev is a guy who, you know, I think we've and people rightly have praised over his career for, you know, being able to problem solve. And, you know, okay, he's not going to totally change his game, but he can mix things up and find ways to beat opponents. That's been a trademark of his. He's got such good tennis IQ, Medvedev. But he came out playing that Australian Open style, really aggressive tennis, and it didn't work, and he was 3-love down, and suddenly he had to change his game plan. And credit to him, he did a little bit, but by that point, the spirit and belief was just broken, because Sinner was just so much better than him, and Sinner's improved his serve so much, and, you know, Medvedev said it's 10 times better than it used to be, and that allows him to set up points, and, like, it's all just there for Jannik Sinner. He just is the complete package right now, combined with just immense confidence as well. So, look, I think as we move into the clay court swing, there's so much to be fascinated about, and whether Jannik Sinner can keep this going on a slower surface on clay is going to be really interesting. But yeah, like, he's absolutely won the start of the season. Like, he is, okay, there was that one loss to Alcaraz, but otherwise he hasn't lost a match, and it's just been awesome to see his continuation of his sort of end of 2023 form. Just amazing.
That stat about no backhand unforced errors is so Djokovician, isn't it? It's kind of the definitive Djokovician stat. And yeah, I was reminded of Djokovic yesterday, that ability to put the ball on a postage stamp relentlessly depth-wise, but also with an injection of pace on both wings that Djokovic doesn't have. I am not saying Sinner is a better tennis player than the greatest male tennis player of all time, Novak Djokovic. Don't at me. But right at this moment, for however long it'll last, that's what he's doing. He's kind of Djokovic with the turbo boosters on, with that incredible whiplash pace. And it was interesting, Grigor Dimitrov, after his victory over Zverev in the semi-final, he came over and did an interview with Sky Sports that we got here in the UK, and he was asked, I think, about the variety in his game, and he sort of, you know, puffed out his chest a bit, and, you know, he's obviously really proud of that element of his game that's sort of all too rare these days. And he said, yeah, I think it really spooks people, the variety that I have. And I thought that was a really, really great turn of phrase. But the problem is, it did not spook Jannik Sinner at all. Jannik Sinner is extremely tall. He's taller than his ATP bio says he is. He's at least 6'5", I think, Jannik Sinner. He's got the knobbliest knees in tennis. And yet, the way he gets down to a low ball is pretty special, I think. I mean, he wasn't particularly troubled by the Grigor Dimitrov slice. And I'm still a little bit haunted by his performance in the semi-finals last year. But I do think, in the words of Hannah Wilkes on the chat just a few moments ago, I think he's a future Wimbledon champion. And Hannah loves to make big predictions about future Wimbledon champions.
I would never do that.
How good is he on clay, Sinner? Do we know? Do we know yet how good he is on clay?
Well, I was looking today at some of his results. I mean, he's beaten Alcaraz on clay in the past. He's lost to Nadal at the French Open a couple of times. Like, absolutely no disgrace in that. He kind of lost to, I think, Rune last year on clay when Rune was playing really well. That was like a 7-5 in the third. Like, I think he's pretty good on clay, actually. And I think the version of Sinner that we're seeing now, you have to think that he's going to be a real threat to win the biggest tournaments, even on clay, over the next few months. And, you know, maybe not maybe he's just not quite as confident and as comfortable, but like he's no slouch on clay whatsoever. And I really think he is coming. He's coming for some of the biggest biggest tournaments that we're going to see over the next few months. And yeah, in the final, I was really struck by the fact that what's impressed me so much about Dimitrov in the quarterfinal and in the semifinal is something that he said recently, and Hannah put it on the barge over the weekend, was that he's managed to turn the fact that he played in the Big Four era kind of into a positive. Like he actually hasn't. Okay, I think during that era he did accumulate baggage against those players, but he's spinning it now as, well, I've come through that era of Djokovic, Federer, and Nadal, Murray. They must have made me better as players. And who I'm going to face now, I must be prepared to face them because I've played those big players. And you see that in the way he came out against Alcaraz. He wasn't thinking, oh, Alcaraz is way better than me. He came out with intent to kind of hurt and win that match against Alcaraz, and he was brilliant. Very good as well against Zverev in the semifinals. And he came out with the same intent against Jannik Sinner in the first few games of that final. I really thought Dimitrov was playing well and we were going to be in for a really close match. And he, you know, and I thought maybe some of that variety would be a good sort of tactic against Sinner. But it just all evaporated so quickly when Sinner got in charge of the match, and it was like suddenly Dimitrov was like, oh, well, this is a level I don't have, and this is a level I can't live with right now. And it just sort of overtook him. And I thought that was just sort of, I don't know, Alcaraz is just much louder with his tennis, isn't he? He's so much more sort of obviously exciting and dynamic and incredible. But Jannik Sinner has turned into such a consistent force now, and once he gets going in a match, I think he's just really, really tough to stop. And I think Dimitrov felt the full weight of that in the final.
Apart from maybe the last couple of games when he perhaps was mentally a bit broken and defeated, I thought Grigor Dimitrov played really well in that final and lost it 6-3, 6-1. I honestly don't think that level from Sinner is something that anybody right now can live with. It was the level he produced in the first set against Carlos Alcaraz in Indian Wells. And then I know Alcaraz raised his level, made some tactical adjustments, but Sinner also dropped off quite significantly in that Indian Wells match. He produced that first set level throughout the match last night. Grigor Dimitrov, David, is back in the top 10. And he is one of the best players in the world right now. Fact.
It's good, isn't it? yeah, it's what I really massively impressed with and pleased with for him is that it's the product of just hard work, consistent effort, and just taking the long road, really, and not just expecting it to happen. And it wasn't showtime in the kind of way we used to talk about him 12 years ago. It was, he's still able to produce those highlight reel moments, but that's not who he is as a professional athlete anymore. He is the total professional right at the moment, with Dani Valverde and Jaime Delgado in his corner. He has really molded himself as a pro, and is getting the best out of himself. And those wins that he got, I mean, according to Dani Valverde, were the product of doing the right things over and over again. And I mean, you know, he's had a terrible time against Alexander Zverev. What is it, 7 losses in a row? And he would just run out of gas. And for him to be dominating that match and then to very nearly win it in two and be a couple of points away and be forced into a third and still find a way to win, I think that is one of his best ever wins. And then the interesting thing is, now, obviously he played a heck of a lot more tennis than Sinner had going into that final. And there were, I do think I had question marks over how he would be physically and how fresh he would be. I really don't think that's why it was so one-sided in the scoreline, because he came out looking fresh. He came out playing well. and he was getting Sinner off balance, and he was in Sinner's service games, and he was winning his own, and his servers was hitting the marks. And then there was just that first point of that first service game that he lost, which was an epic point. It was just an amazing toe-to-toe, right, Sinner, I'm happy to stand on the baseline and duke it out with you. And just, I reckon I can out-hit you. I reckon I'll get you off balance. And I'll, and then he eventually tried to hit a drop shot as the winning shot, and it hit the net. And I looked at Dimitrov at that point and thought, crikey, he's shell-shocked by the fact that he didn't win that point, because he hit every shot perfectly, and they all came back, and they all came back with something on them, and he just looked really quite winded by that particular point, and he was never the same again. And it wasn't because his level dropped significantly, it was just one of those moments. I think you see it in boxing matches sometimes, when somebody lands their biggest right hand and it just doesn't really have any effect on the other guy, and that must be soul destroying, really. But he's shown a great aptitude for just dusting himself down after each one of these tournaments, because, you know, he hasn't won many of them, because you don't win many of them. But he hasn't got dispirited. He's just kept coming back for more. And so I feel confident that Dimitrov will wring out whatever potentially he has in his career from now on. I don't think he'll let himself down. What that will be to I said the other day on the show he would have to get to a Grand Slam final, in my view, for him to take it a notch above where he's been. But at the same time, you know, at the age of 32, given what he's kind of gone through in terms of going the wrong direction sometimes, and given he's up against guys 10 years his junior who are bloody good, even if this is it, I think it's a career to be really proud of in the end. And that's quite an interesting journey he's gone on, because it's not what I thought would happen 12 years ago. I thought he would have probably a multi Grand Slam winning career. I mean, given the amount of people I think are going to win multiple Grand Slams, you'd need about 6,000 of them, wouldn't you, in about 10 years. But still, I'm really pleased for him that he's managed to find his way to this point.
In keeping with the theme of unscientific analysis of looks in the eye that David started earlier with Yannick Sinner, I see a different look in Grigor Dimitrov's eye just now. He looks, for the first time to me, like he actually believes rather than he's telling himself to believe. I just see a slightly calmer, firmer waters. And I don't know where it'll take him, but I can tell you that people on the chat are saying in the mix at Wimbledon, ?
I'd have to say no. And I should correct myself from earlier. I do read the chat, but I read it afterwards because Catherine's banned me from reading it during the show. Because otherwise I get distracted. Yeah. But I would say...
Some people are good multitaskers. They're generally women, and David's not one of them.
Correct. I can't say that he's in the mix for Wimbledon, because the in the mix is, wouldn't be surprised if he, is it won a Grand Slam or it's the final?
One.
No, it's final. No, it's one. Yeah. Oh, God.
It's definitely one.
It's one,
he's not,
yeah.
He's not going to win Wimbledon. I'm sorry. I'd love him to. I know that I'm supposed to be unbiased, but I would love him to win Wimbledon. I don't see it.
Okay. Matt, while we're speaking of distraction, how distracted are you by the fact that Amanda Varanasimova might be about to bagel Elise Cornet?
Good things are happening. No offence to Elise Cornet.
It sounds quite offensive to Elise Cornet.
And I believe that I'm going to say when Anisimova wins this, she will play Jessica Pegula in the next round. Ooh, and hello. I saw a little video recently where the players had to build their perfect player. And for the backhand, Jessica Pegula, because she knows things, said Amanda Anisimova's backhand. So that'd be a fun matchup.
And is this the Olive Branch after the US Open matter? Is this the Jessica Pegula... sort of.
Oh, you know, we don't mention that, David.
Trying to get back on the right side of you after being awful to us.
You did that, David, with your crisis communication. Yep. Dash to the dash to the outside of the press room to go and put things straight.
Mm. Everything is straight. There's no need to do.
Fine.
Jessica Pegula drags us in a US Open press conference relived. we're going to have a little look at...
Are you guys the tennis podcast? Oh, no.
Living rent-free in Matt's head. We're going to have a little look at the clay court season, which begins this week. Tennis's classroom, as Mary Carrillo calls it. We get to preview clay. And we're going to do that in just a moment's time. But first, I'm going to do two bits of housekeeping. First, if you're with us live on YouTube right now, please like and subscribe to our channel and to this video. It just really helps us for reasons that are a bit above my YouTuber pay grade. It's really, really important that we get the likes and the subscriptions to our channel. So it costs you nothing, but it helps us a lot. So please do hit like and subscribe. And number two, bit of housekeeping. If you like what you're hearing and you want more of it, then you can become a friend of the Tennis Podcast. I have a little list of reasons and enticements for you to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast in the month of April, which of course begins today. Reason number one, The Barge. It's the place to be to talk about tennis in a safe space. Number two, the documentary, tennis documentary review show that we're going to be recording very soon indeed. We're going to not only be reviewing season two of Breakpoint, we're going to be reviewing the Boris Becker documentary, the Ons Jabeur documentary, and any other tennis documentaries that get released in the next few days. There's a Zendaya film about tennis coming out. Maybe we should hold off and throw that into the show as well. Anyway, TBC. Hannah's column. It's excellent. She's done three so far. There's going to be another one in the month of April, and I, for one, can't wait to read it. We have our next monthly live show on the 11th of April, so that's midweek next week. I make that Thursday of next week. And we have our next Tennis Relived edition, most of which is already in the bag, isn't it? That'll be recording and available to you mid-April. So it's all happening for friends of the Tennis Podcast. If you'd like to become a friend, the link is in our show notes, and it's, I think, in our YouTube blurb as well, David. We're all
correct.
Just learning and growing as YouTubers here as we go. Right, clay. We have the WTA 500 in Charleston with Jessica Pegula and Ons Jabeur as the top two seeds. Amanda Anisimova, has she won, Matt?
She has.
She's won. Okay.
Elisa Cornet is waving goodbye.
Azarenka, Kasatkina, Wozniacki, Key, Sadaj Meyer, Sakkari, Svitolina are all in the field there. There's a few names there that I think could do with some results, particularly now we've hit the clay. I'm in particular looking, I'm looking a little bit at Jessica Pegula, but I'm mostly looking at Ons Jabeur and Beatriz Haddad-Schmeier, who could do with putting something together this season, I think, and finding their feet on clay seems as good a time as any to do that. What do you think, David?
Yeah, they've had a rough few months, haven't they? I mean, Jabeur has had the injury problems that she's been suffering from. Haddad-Schmeier is a surprise to me because she was in such a great vein of form at the end of last year. I thought she would come out and build on that immediately. I still think her best shot might be this period of the year when she's on clay and she's not like a super hard ball striker on a hard court. I think maybe the trajectory of the shots is more suited to her on clay. We know she can play on grass. She got those couple of grass court wins that led to my humiliation at Wimbledon when I picked her to reach the final and she lost in the first round. Thank you, Beatrice. I just love this time of year. This is probably my favourite change of surface. I mean, I also enjoy clay into grass for different reasons, but I just find it so intriguing. It's so different. The movement is so different. And the way you can just watch the rallies build and see who's going to come out and grasp it and find their form immediately. I absolutely love this change of surface. Probably more in my latter years than I used to years ago. And there's so many players that are going to be interesting to follow. I mean, you mentioned, you know, we've talked a lot about Collins. I'm fascinated to see how she gets on. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I really want to see how Maria Sakkari gets on, because she's had, you know, because she didn't reach the final, we didn't talk about her that much, but she was so close, you know, to beating Rybakina the other day. And her next steps on this surface will be interesting to me. But there's so many.
Yeah, like, I think across the two tours, there's just so many fascinating unknowns this clay court season. Like, you know, you feel like Iga Świątek is kind of a banker, like she's going to play well on the clay. We know that. I think Alcaraz and Sinner as well, but kind of what their upper limits are, I think, are sort of still to be seen on the clay. But then you've got like Tsitsipas and Rune in desperate need of some results on the clay. You've got, as you said, Ons Jabeur. I think Coco Gauff as well. Like she didn't have a brilliant sunshine double, and I think clay still to me feels like maybe her best surface. I don't know. Like she's won loads on hard courts. That's probably tough to say. But like it's a surface that we know she can play really well on. There's Naomi Osaka, who's taken a wild card into a clay court 250 the week of Stuttgart, like really signalling her intent to try and get matches and wins on this surface. So I think that's fascinating as well.
I was really pleased to see that.
Me too. I think that was a really smart move. Mm. Yeah. You got Medvedev, who's actually defending quite a lot of points on clay because he suddenly realized that he could play on it last year. So that's like a whole new element. And then of course there's Rafael Nadal to come back during the clay court swing. Like there's so much, I think, to be excited about on court over the next few months.
Yeah, I agree. The ATP this week, so WTA in Charleston for a 500 and Bogota for a 250. The ATP are in Estoril. That's a 250. Casper Ruud, Hubert Hurkacz, Lorenzo Musetti, Artur Fies, Guillaume Fies and Dominic Thiem playing there. I think Dominic Thiem got a win today, which is notable because he has been losing first round matches at clay court challenges. That is where we are with Dominic Thiem sadness levels. So he won a main draw ATP match today, guys. It's something to build on. João Fonseca, I saw, is playing in Estoril as well, I think. So that's our next chance to get a look at the 17-year-old. Remember we saw him in Rio, tearing things up, looking very exciting, making us make bold, recency bias-based predictions about him. So the ATP's in Estoril, also in Marrakesh. I saw that Matteo Berrettini is in Marrakesh, trying desperately to get some points on the board. And in Houston as well, where Ben Shelton is the top seed. Ben Shelton barely won a match on clay last year, did he? I'm not sure. Not sure clay and Shelton. Oh, dear.
Right. And he did the whole thing in Europe, if you remember. He came over and he played everything. I mean, by the way, I love Estoril. I've been to that tournament. It's more than 20 years ago now, but I love that tournament. And
it's in a bit of danger, isn't it? Like it's not been included on
right.
next year's ATP calendar. I think they're trying to find a spot for it.
But I really hope it can
continue because it's a great event, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great sort of. A bit like Charleston, it just feels like a great clay court season opener. This is where I don't want the clay court season to start without Estoril. It's awesome. But yeah, I remember Shelton playing all these events, and I really liked that about the fact that he was giving that a go. I think it's good education. And if you remember, I spoke to his dad at Wimbledon. That's the first time I'd ever met him. And he said, look, I don't think he'll be doing that again. he'll be sort of, you know, I think he really fancies his chances, particularly on grass. And he wants to make the most of that. But at the same time, really good for him. I think that was their view at the time.
Any ones to watch on clay? Luca Nardi won a challenger title last week, didn't he? Beat Pierre-Hugues Bert in the final.
I'll be watching Artefis very closely. I mean, obviously,
some results.
He's had a rough few weeks. I mean, he hasn't just lost. I mean, he's looked like he can't keep the ball in the court. You know, as though he really doesn't know what's going to happen when he swings the racket. So, you know, I've got quite a lot at stake credibility-wise there. I mean, you might say, what credibility after the 12 slams in a row debacle? But come on, I get the odd one right.
Every time Artefis loses, David gets a text from Dan Evans questioning his credibility as a tennis broadcaster. Matt, anyone you're looking forward to seeing?
I feel like we've listed so many names and all of those. I think actually you made a good call with Hadaj Maia. Like, I was really into her on the clay last year. Like, it's funny, like, she's, as you said, she can play really well on grass. And I think her stroke production is almost suits the grass more. She's got a really compact backhand. She hits it quite flat. She just loves the marathons, doesn't she, on the clay and, like, taking people into the trenches. Like most people are knackered at 3 hours and she's just getting going. Like, the match is just starting for her. That's where she wants the match to be. And I've really on board after we did our Tennis Relive show on Maria Bueno and just got a sense of actually Hadaj Maia's pretty big deal in Brazil, and I think it would be really great if, like, she went on another run at Roland Garros. I think that's an underrated match actually from last year, her semi-final against Iga Świątek. That was it was straight sets, but that was pretty close, and I was impressed with Hadaj Maia. And yeah, the way she finished last season, I was just hoping that she would continue it. But maybe now this is the time on the clay. I mean, she needs to stay out of Katie Bolter's way. She keeps losing to Katie Bolter, doesn't she? But I guess, I think, has Bolter ever played a WTA clay court event? I feel like maybe not.
I believe she hasn't, which is extraordinary. So,
yeah. So I think, you know, Hadaj Maia would definitely fancy her chances on the clay against Bolter. But yeah, like, there are lots of obvious names, but maybe like a less obvious one is Hadaj Maia, who really stands out to me.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. We have a mascot for this show. The mascot is Maisie. Remember Maisie, David? Maisie is
absolutely
owned by Tom Sansonetti. Maisie is a Norfolk Terrier who helped guide David to first place in the predictions competition last year.
See, I'm not all rubbish. As long as Maisie's by my side, I can produce. It's all about who's in your corner, you see.
What are you trying to say about Francis?
What are you saying about Francis? Yeah.
Well, early days, we're just getting to know each other, right? Still 3 slams to go, folks.
Tom says, it's very fitting that Maisie is mascot for Charleston week, since that's her home tournament. He looks forward to seeing all of the players practice every year and paces the fence and chases the balls to she looks forward to seeing all of the I misgendered Maisie, terrible moment. She looks forward to seeing all of the players practice every year and paces the fence and chases the balls to her heart's content. A line which implies that the Charleston tournament is dog friendly. Very keen for that to be confirmed one way or another. Answers on a postcard, please. Do let us know if Charleston is a dog-friendly tennis tournament. Can get Billie Jean in a suitcase pretty quickly. We could be on a plane before you know it. We have our mascots. I've got the dearly departed Darwin. David has got Francis.
Well, Francis.
Tough scene for Francis today. And Matt has got Haider and Soma. Billie Jean is at my feet. She is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have top folks and executive producers Greg, Chris, Jeff and Jamie. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
We have Ahmed Barua, who is in Catherine Putney.
Hey!
Ahmed?
He could be in my midst. I thought you were going to say Charleston. Well, great choice. Great life choices, Ahmed. What part of Putney? Let me know. I've lived
Catherine
in two different...
And Joe Salisbury? Parts of Putney. They're the other...
Yeah, although
Putney
I believe
residents.
He's moved.
Oh, he's ditched it.
Jamie Baker lived in Putney for a while. I used to see him... do you remember when he worked at Santander? He went and got a job in banking after he retired. Yes, and I used to see him commuting from Putney Station. Anyway, thank you, Ahmed.
Thanks, Ahmed.
I'm annoyed at Jamie Baker because he's the answer I got wrong on the Mastermind quiz.
Yes, there is some absolutely top-notch content provided by Matt on our Instagram right now.
I mean, honestly, who knew that? Surely no one.
I think if you didn't know, then nobody knew.
What else? We've got Katie Wilson, although Katie says that she would like to dedicate her shout-out to her mum, Paula.
Oh. Thanks, Katie.
Well, Katie, like Katie Bolter.
Yes. And Paula, like...
Badossa?
Paula Badossa.
Was there a Paula Suarez?
Yes.
Back in the day?
Yes, there was, David.
Very good.
You've excelled yourself. Thank you, Katie, and thank you, Paula. That's lovely. Very heartwarming.
Yes, they talk about the pod together and go to tennis tournaments together. Aww. And this year they're taking their first trip to Roland Garros.
Oh, my God.
Oh, we'll come and say hello.
You're going
to
love
David's
it.
Easy to spot.
Can confirm.
See you in Paris.
And finally, we have Maddie, who is from the Gold Coast in Australia, but now living in Hong Kong. And I met Maddie. Maddie and her best friend, Eliza. I met them at the Australian Open. They were at the Anisimova Sabalenka match. And we had a lovely chat afterwards. They were.
Had they come to find you because they knew you'd be at the Anisimova match?
Possibly.
People call Madison Keys Maddie, don't they?
Maddie Inglis.
That's an Australian player.
Oh, yes. A sensation.
Thank you, Maddie. Thank you to all of our shout-out friends, our intro friends. Thank you to all of our friends. You keep this show on the road year-round and you enable us to produce lots of excellent bonus content if you'd like to become a friend. The link is in our show notes. And before we say goodbye, please, if you are with us live on YouTube or non-live on YouTube, just if you're with us on YouTube, do hit the subscribe button. Thank you very much for joining us this evening, for spending your Monday evening or daytime or Tuesday morning, whatever it is, with us. And we will speak to you next Monday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.